Hello, this is Blair Stanislao with the Happy Lion Center. Welcome to our podcast, Mystical and Infamous, where we have playful and easy conversations about anything mystical, getting to the heart of all things strange and weird. Join us in a bit of magical tomfoolery, spreading the alchemy of love and light. And now, we invite you to enjoy the show.
Being multidimensional and talking about multidimensionality and how that feels and looks, because I had an epiphany about that last week. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you what it is, because you may not want to talk about this.
Okay.
20 years ago, which I think is really important, because this whole Pluto cycle that we've just shifted into a new thing. Mm-hmm. 20 years ago was the first time I ever saw anything multidimensional.
Okay.
And I was on a business trip. I was still in the corporate world. I was still married, albeit briefly after that, because he told me 2 days later he wanted a divorce. And I went on this business trip to Denver, and it was a last minute thing. Somebody had gotten sick and they needed somebody to do a trade show. And so my boss called me because I lived in Atlanta at the time, because you can get a plane to anywhere at the drop of a hat from Atlanta.
Right.
And she said, can you go to Denver like tonight and do this trade show tomorrow? And I was like, yeah, because all I really heard was, oh, more frequent flyer miles. Mm-hmm. I did not ride my emotional wave on this and think it through thoroughly.
Yeah.
So I just figured, I got on a plane at 7 o'clock. I just figured that I'd sleep on the plane, you know, and that would make up for being up half the night just to get to Denver. And I didn't, because it was ski season. It was the middle of winter, and everybody on the plane was drunk. And they were like yelling and throwing things across the plane and, you know, just craziness. And there was like no way I was going to sleep. I was furious by the time I got there. And I get there, get my rental car, go to get my car. The doors are frozen shut. The lock's frozen. I had to go back, because I live in the South all my life. I don't know how to deal with that. Yeah, get the rental car guy to come undo my car. Get to my room, and I hadn't eaten. So I think I got something out of a snack machine, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm trying to calm down myself enough to go to sleep. And I'm sitting on the bed, and I look across the room, and in the far corner of the room is a TV monitor. It looked like a black and white security monitor that wasn't there. I mean, it was just appeared to be there.
Okay.
And I'm looking at that. That's weird. And on it, I was looking at the inside of a bank, and there were like three tellers with people standing in line, and they're doing their little transactions, you know, and the guy will finish and he'll put his money away. The next guy goes up, and I'm watching this, you know, going, that's just freaking bizarre. And then it disappeared.
Okay.
And so then I went to sleep. Finally, I pulled all the blackout curtains and everything so I could get a good night's rest. And I woke up in the middle of the night. I turned over, and I guess I opened my eyes and looked at my hand, and light is streaming out of my hands. And I start playing with it. I was like, mm-hmm. you know, and putting my hands on the sheets and taking them away.
Like a kid with a flashlight.
Yeah. Or, you know, my Star Wars lightsaber. Yeah. But it was you know, and it's like, Gene, you got to go to sleep, because you've got to get up and you're going to have the day from hell tomorrow anyway, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first time. And when I got home, like 2 days later, I told my husband, I said, I can't do this anymore. I'm like 55 years old. I'm too old.
To travel, you mean?
To unpack a trade show booth by myself.
Oh, uh-huh.
Get on my feet for 8 hours with no relief, mm-hmm. pack it all up. You know,
yeah,
it was just crazy, which I should have told her no when she asked me. Yeah. But again, all I heard was frequent flyer miles, you know, and back in those days, that was important. So when I get home, my husband says, the next morning, Saturday morning, he comes in the room. And he says, I want a divorce. I don't want to go to counseling. I still love you. I just don't love you enough. There's not anybody else, which was a lie, you know, all the rest. But, you know, and at the time it meant something then, you know, it was just like, I was very angry, but then I wasn't really happy. So I was glad that I had it out and that he had asked for it. So I had him by the small.
Yeah.
Yeah. so I got what I wanted out of the divorce, and the rest is history. But what I realized last week was that was the first time I'd ever seen interdimensionally. And because I had raised my consciousness up to such a point, I was no longer in coherence with my husband. So yeah. We couldn't have married.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We had to go. And I also had, I sat there on my, at Stapleton, I was writing on my laptop, at what today we would call a blog. I was just open to Word doc, and it was called Angry. And I spewed anger onto the page. I am so tired of being a freaking doormat. You know, my boss, I'm a doormat to my boss. I'm a doormat to my husband. I'm, you know, frothing at the mouth. Mm-hmm. And then the next day is when, you know, and I, of course I deleted that, but you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, at least you got it out.
Yeah, I did. But, you know, so I didn't know what multidimensional was in 2004. I mean, I'd only just waked up, you know.
Well, let's, I know that we were just in a meeting together, but I want to, because we're recording this, I want to get everybody kind of on the same page before we dive into that too much. Somebody in the class asked, we were working with a past life, and what did she ask? Oh, she said, which I do find people sometimes do this, because I do past life regression, right? And I didn't have an opinion one way or the other. I now have an opinion, but it's interesting to watch everybody's kind of responses to that. And even
the woman who said she thought she was somewhere else.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So I actually had, which I have been told in this new class that I'm taking too, when you're practicing the energy work, probably the worst person to practice on is a friend. And the reason being, much what you were just mentioning in the group that we were just in, which is the person needs to seek out the healing and they need to participate. They have to want it, right? And so this person that I was doing, it was hypnosis at that time, I was so excited about it and I was sharing it with her because she's my friend. Okay, so she says she wants to be one of my guinea pigs. And so we start to do the thing and I guess I was just lazy. I didn't even remember. She and I literally had never talked about the concept of past lives before we go into the process, right? So we're doing this thing and I'm trying to get her to go under. So I actually shared this with Jean. Oh my gosh, what's her name? Soul Speak. It's her Dolores Cannon's daughter, Julia. Okay, so I actually shared this with Julia and basically she said, that's a perfect example of how not to do it. And that was largely because they are there. Your friends are usually there to support you. They don't want the healing per se. They don't really have an interest in the healing, but they want to support you. So they're going to argue with you instead of being receptive to what you're doing, right? So what I want to touch on briefly is the concept of past lives. And I'll tell you my evolution is that I had no opinion whatsoever. Brought up in Tallahassee, said, you know, Bible Belt, like whatever, that's what they present us. Had an Indian friend and she, of course, was Hindu. And I was like, so tell me about your religion. Well, she didn't really want to share it, but I found it really interesting. And so I kind of entertained reincarnation for a while. And I thought, yeah, that's really pretty cool. But then nothing else because I didn't have any other friends who believed that or acted on that or whatever. Go through time, eventually wind up doing these past life regression through hypnosis. But even before that, before I did the hypnosis, but after childhood, basically, when I was married, my husband had died. And I can remember walking down the street and trying to figure out why did he feel like home, like just so comfortable and so familiar. Well, eventually this turned, I got the answer through I got part of the answer through astrology because you can see where that is, right? But then again, it reminded me of essentially manifestation, which you and I have talked about before, is that I remembered that time on my bike, because I used to ride my bike all the time, where I loved doing it, I had a fun time, I was out, I was in the zone, right? And I remember daydreaming about being married. And it wasn't that I was daydreaming about marrying a particular person, although there I was dating somebody, whatever. But the specifics that I had daydreamed about. So this is like 6 months after my husband dies. And I said to myself, oh my gosh, that is exactly what I asked for. Like the whole thing. Okay. So that's when I recognized. And then I kept pondering on that. And I got for me, the information came through was, yes, I created it when I was 17. Yes, sure, time is what we call linear, but wait a minute. I created that back then. Did I already know about this experience that I was having? Like, why would I create it the way I created it? How would I? So then that muddy water between time gets really confusing. And so as I grow in the hypnosis practice, part of the way that you speak to people is you say past lives. Well, then I get to, by the time I'm really doing hypnosis, I'm like, I don't think there's past. I really think it's like pretty much everything is now. Yeah. Right. So then I started having a problem with that. So that evolved for me. But I think a lot of people have a hard time with that concept of time not being linear. And then also the idea that another one recently within the last year, somebody did an energy healing on me, similar to your work, but different. And so she was doing her testing. And of course, she wound up having some questions or whatever. So she says some things. And what I found really, really interesting that really solidified it for me was she said, I don't remember what she was talking about. She's talking about some kind of trigger. And I don't remember how it was. It was like the need to defend yourself. Okay. And so whatever she was saying brought up this memory for me in this lifetime. And it was, I was teaching in Pensacola. I was teaching art because that was my degree. And that's how I went in. And I was doing training at the district level. So I was with all the other art and music people, got actually sectioned off with the visual arts people. And the director was in the room. And essentially what she was telling us is that we needed to convince all of the parents, if you will, right, the stakeholders, that art was valuable and blah, 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 because that's all I heard. And I immediately thought, oh, no, I don't. And it was a very strange, guttural, and I like teaching. I like teaching art. It wasn't any of that. But this response was like, no, I don't. And I don't even know why you think you can tell me that. And you can tell me that all you want, but I'm not going to do it, right? And I didn't mean I was like not going to do what I had to do, but I was going to do the minimum because I really didn't believe that. So she pulls this up in the session and she describes to me and she said, it's another lifetime that you're in, that you had a traumatic event and experiencing what I did as a teacher triggered that, which is why I had this very unusual misplaced response to what she told me. What's wrong with getting the parents to get on board with art, right? Like, that's not that big of a deal. But anyways, it made a lot of sense to me because it was like, oh, that really makes a lot of sense because you don't have to. Yeah, I don't know how to describe it. It just makes a lot of sense to say that there's another part of you that somewhere else experienced a different time that can affect the lifetime that you're in or the one that you're experiencing right now.
And that somewhere else may be only as far away from you as the tip of your nose.
Yeah. Now expand on that. What do you mean?
Huh?
What do you mean by that?
Like it may just be the breadth of a finger away from you physically is where that other dimension is.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah. So now we're talking again about that sacred geometry stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And like, so what probably happened to you in that class, what, or when you had that meeting with that teacher, was that you just moved ever so slightly and the dimension that you were physically in got that close to the one where you'd had that traumatic experience mm-hmm. with, you know, as a teacher. And you're at that cross point that I was talking about in the class where two timelines cross. Mm-hmm. And it was like, nope, yeah. I'm not going to. You can't make me do that. You're not the boss of me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really interesting. So let me ask you this too. And this, hopefully this is not too scattered. So I have a regular meditation practice. I have a group that I lead and we do this. And so we have all kinds of experiences through there. So one particular time I was, I would say, you know, if I hadn't done this for many years, I'd be like, I was doing really good. You know, like my mind was shut off, whatever. I was there. I was totally in the zone. And I don't always see things, but I do sometimes see things. And I was seeing something. I don't remember what it was. But all of a sudden I saw this almost like a silhouette. So it's in a sense, it was almost like a picture coming into focus. So like you weren't sure what it was. And then all of a sudden you start to recognize it. So it was like a silhouette of a body that looked humanish, but it wasn't really humanish. It had like a big head and I don't remember what else. It just wasn't completely human. And I was just looking at it. And then I started to see like a skeleton. Now, being in this world, I hear a lot of people talking about aliens or different, you know, I mean, and they go to elaborate lengths to describe these things, and they're fantastical. I mean, it's like, okay, this is what we put in movies, right? This is where we're getting the information. And I was just, I don't have that. Like, I don't have that kind of experience where I have had a personal interaction with something that I could describe as this, you know, otherworldly being. And so this popped up, and I mean, it could not have been half a second. So I was in the zone. This image starts to come. I see it's a skeleton. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, it's an alien. I'm so excited about this. And I mean, instantaneously disappeared and still has not come back. But so what that told me was that the vibration of excitement was lower than wherever I was. Right.
Yeah.
So maybe, let's just dive in there. I just wanted to put that out there for what, you know, people haven't experienced things like, how does it actually come? You say interdimensionality.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that saying that it's right there in front of your face, maybe in a physical-ish sense, that makes a lot of sense, because that definitely resonates with how I felt at that time of, you need to promote art to all to everybody.
Yeah. I get it.
How did it continue for you?
So, I've continued since 2004 to grow in consciousness. And obviously I did not continue in that relationship or even that reality. And I was free to expand and do what I do. And I hadn't thought about it for a long time. And it was almost like last week. And I was reading a fiction book.
Okay.
A book by Nora Roberts called Becoming, I think. I don't remember what it was. I think it was called Becoming. Awakening. And it made it so clear to me what had begun to happen in 2004. Because it's about, you know, it's about a girl who moves between dimensions. Mm-hmm. And I realized that was the first time I did it. And I didn't get a good outcome from it, because, you know, looking at the reality of it, well, it cost me a marriage, you know.
You're saying because you went there?
Because I changed.
Okay.
I guess. I don't know. Uh-huh. So I think I kind of buried that for a while.
Uh-huh.
And now it's starting to come back out that, I mean, I know that all of the stuff that I do is multidimensional. I get that. Uh-huh. But now I'm starting to realize how it all ties together. Uh-huh. Because, you know, we talk about that thought is creative and words are creative, and you're creating something every time you think a thought, and da-da-da-da-da. But so many times it doesn't manifest, and sometimes it does. Mm-hmm. And so we could make a flow chart of how to do it so that we could manifest the ones we want and skip the others, you know, and bottle that, we could be a millionaire.
Oh, no kidding.
You know, and I began to realize that, okay, so when it does manifest, like, I think about Blair and Blair calls me.
Mm-hmm.
I thought about Blair and it sent a trigger to you and you picked up the phone and you called me.
Right.
Okay. So that's an example of it manifesting in reality pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But then there are these other things that, you know, I've been working on for a while. For example, the beloved partner.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking all the right thoughts, doing all the right things and saying all the right words. But hadn't met him yet. What I realized last week was I've absolutely created the beloved partner in a different dimension.
Mm-hmm.
I've just got to wait until the time spiral continuum shifts to the point where, boom, it's right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, what do I do with that information? I'm not really sure. But I think if we could all start thinking about where are we creating and what are we creating, you know, we begin to get closer to having a handle on conscious creation and manifestation the way we would like it to be.
Well, you know, that kind of gets to the foundation of really manifestation, in the sense that, you know, one of those principles is you go into that creative mode, you daydream about it, you think about all the details, and then you let it go. Mm-hmm. Forget about it. And you say, okay, well, whatever. If it happens, it happens. That's great. If not, oh, well, I'll be fine.
Yeah.
And so that's the releasing of it. But I think that actually causes it to, that you're talking about interdimensional, like a shift or a rotation in those dimensions, so that the spots line up. So then it becomes a physical reality in the one you're experiencing.
Yeah.
I'm going to pull this in.
Okay.
I actually thought about this before we started talking, but I didn't know where I was going to do that. So I was just having a conversation with a friend of mine who does this work, and she's kind of getting into it. And I found it really, I didn't know you were going to be in the group today that I was at earlier. So that was great. But also, she's working on clearing her path. So she asked, it was actually Michael Sheridan, which I'm taking a class with him too. So it's all connected, right? And we know that our clients who come in are working on stuff somehow connected to what we're working on, and like just like always. Friends and family and all the time. Okay, so she's working on, so she wanted to get clarification that she in fact was channeling. And of course he could tell that. And I don't know what to say other than, yeah, I know pretty much I can tell when you are. I mean, I'm probably not as good as him at identifying whether you're going out of it or not, but that's irrelevant. And so he told her some things to do. One of the things he said was, you need to clear your channel. Well, in the group that I'm, the course I'm in with him, we are doing that. We literally just started that Sunday. I shared with her what the experience was, and she's not sure if she's going to do that or not. But when you were sharing with us how to do the muscle testing, I really appreciated your specificity about essentially what I understood to be was your kind of the mental mind that is what keeps us alive and keeps us functioning in this 3D world that gets in the way of meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And that includes the body, right? The methods that you were describing were helping us to weaken the prowess, in a sense, of that physical body and the mental mind. So take away its power and say, okay, well, it's not really that powerful. It doesn't have that much of an effect. Now do it this way. And just the acknowledgement of kind of like letting that go and still trusting is so powerful. And as I was talking to her, She's somebody who absolutely does that questioning. Like, she's very smart and her mouth runs really, really fast. And so before some people only have two sentences, like me, I only have like two sentences in my head even that haven't come out. And she said like four or five different statements. So 2 seconds after my statements in my head, I'm like waiting for her to finish so I can say, oh, okay, let's stop that thought and think about it a different way. We were just talking about trusting your higher self or the guidance or intuition or whatever it is. Okay. Trusting that without questioning, which is something you've shared with us in the group. But what I was sharing with her was like, isn't it just awesome? Well, first off, we know that it works, because if you do this work, you know, it works every time.
Yeah. Okay? Every time.
But not only does it just work, but something you also mentioned earlier today was it always works the way it's supposed to work. Even if you mess up, it still works the way it's supposed to work, which in a Christian language, it would be God doesn't give you anything you can't handle, right? Like, okay. So there's a trust in that. But the beauty of it for me is that, like, it's not literally there is nobody else. I say body. That's not true. There is no other energy that could possibly be looking out for your highest good more than what we call the higher self. Like literally nobody better. So that the trust in that, I think plays a factor in there, because I think what you're talking about, understanding really the art of manifesting and kind of waiting for, like, why do some things come and other things don't come, has to do with that trust factor. Like, do you trust wholly, or do you have some programs running in your head and in your mind or in the subconscious that are contradicting that?
Oh yeah. And you know, and that's why I keep doing this work. Like every Sunday, I work on myself, and mm-hmm. it's on the beloved partner thing, basically, except that a couple of weeks ago, I decided, you know what, I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm just going to surrender, let go, and let God. Uh-huh. And rather than say I want to work on clearing the beloved partner blocks, then I'm just going to allow it to happen.
Yeah.
And so I've changed my focus for my thing. But I mean, I've done hundreds of sessions on it, and it's always a different layer of limiting belief around it, you know, every time.
Yeah.
And no two are alike.
So, well, much like you were describing with your method, you know, and I find this with the work that I did too, is that people don't even, and I know this, that's why I'm usually like, okay, whatever, we'll just do whatever. For me, when I go for a healing, is people don't really understand. They don't really know what it is that's in their way. If they did, they would probably not have it there. Right.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. Because we're not stupid.
No. Yeah.
We're adventurous.
Yeah.
Our souls are adventurous. Our souls want to experience everything, the good, the bad, and the ugly, you know? And so, you know, we'll allow this stuff to happen so that we can say, oh yeah, I've done that now. I got a t-shirt, and then move on. You know, so I think our souls are little data gathering Pac-Men.
Yes.
You know, we're going around eating data and giving it back to our higher self to store in the big computer in the sky, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, actually, so this kind of brings forward, which, I mean, as life goes, it's always beautiful when it all comes together. So in my household, we've been having some arguments, some communication issues for several weeks. And by the way, I just got married within the last year, so we've got more merging families. It's not common. But anyways, and so I have two children. My husband has a daughter who's there part-time. And so we're merging two families and, of course, all the things that can happen and that are happening. So we're having lots of conversations about this. And, of course, I'm the one that's like, I connect with my kids. They easily connect with me. They share with me what they think. And then my husband shares with me what he thinks. So, like, I feel like I'm in the middle.
I'm sure.
Not necessarily the battling, just that I can see that all sides have a valid standpoint, right? Okay, so weeks and weeks ago, something happened and I said, which was part of this, I said, okay, everybody's not being heard. That's what's happening. People aren't. And it's not that people aren't speaking or people aren't listening fully, which they're not, but it's, they're not hearing what they're really trying to say versus what they're actually saying. And eventually my husband and I had gotten to this point where he said what he really needed to say, what was underneath it, which was, I feel like every time I do anything, it's wrong. Okay. My ego self was like, well, I don't know why you would think that. We don't think you're wrong. You know, and we have a little discussion and then I go away. And as I start processing, I start to think, I kind of knew this stuff, but I didn't know it completely. And I think this solidifies it. So we all have spiritual gifts. And one of these spiritual gifts I have is what they call projection, which is you can essentially, you think a thought and it kind of goes into the other person. They don't know that it's not theirs. And so that's why it's helpful as a healer, because as a healer, they come in to get healed. And what happens is the healer who has this ability thinks and sees this person as complete and whole, and the problems are resolved. Okay. So then that person starts to think and feel that. And then they start to remember, oh yeah, that's how I am. Okay. So it's helpful in that sense. It's not helpful if you're in an argument and you're thinking about the negative things, right?
Right. Yeah.
So I'm learning all this stuff and I'm, you know, as soon as I can, I think it's appropriate, I share it with my kids. And so I was messaging my kids and I was like, well, okay, this is what he's saying. So, and I'm thinking about the projection. I'm thinking, if I have it, maybe my children have it, because I know my children have some of the gifts that I have. So I just start writing all this stuff out. And then I realize, well, heck, maybe I'm doing this and I didn't even realize it. So there are things that I disagree with about some of the things that he does. My children disagree even more. They're children, of course, right? But regardless, yes, there's a disconnect or a misalignment with some of those things. And from my kids' mouths, it has come through that they have actually verbalized he's wrong about that. Okay. But I guess I didn't really fully recognize that I was actually making an impact. And as I'm typing my children saying, you need to be cognizant of your thoughts. I don't know if that's true for you, but it's true for me. So I need to be just, stop. That's already gone through. He's getting it.
Three-pointed bat.
Yeah, I know. I said that my son is like, that's so corny. I'm like, I don't care if it's corny. It's true.
Yeah. You know?
Exactly. Yeah. And so, right. So I'm saying, be very cognizant of your thoughts. Of course, I'm realizing I need to do that too. And I think that, I think we're not aware of all the things that we can do. And we do, we don't even realize we're doing those things. Yeah. Like the thoughts that we learn from whatever experience, whether this time or another lifetime or what have you.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is really something very interesting to play with. And I'm thinking that even maybe a year ago, or even maybe a month ago, the consciousness, the mass consciousness, wasn't at enough of a level to allow us to take this to the next step. But I think now it is. Something shifted. And I palpably felt the shift a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I think that maybe now we're actually able to come a step closer to figuring out what dimension we created in with those thoughts or those words, mm-hmm. and going and fetching it and
bringing it
closer to get like right there.
So what do you think, just right off the top of your head, what are you thinking about in terms of pulling it closer?
I don't really know yet, but I will tell you.
I would be willing to bet that letting go, like you just said you did, like you decided mm-hmm. to just drop it and surrender. Mm-hmm. I would bet that's a huge factor, because I'm sure people have read, if they're an adult and ever wanted a relationship, you know, you can go find this anywhere. It's like some people say, if you just let it go and don't worry about it, then it shows up. And it does. It does. It absolutely does.
And I pretty much have done that. But I will tell you, 2 years ago, I wrote a book about this. It's called Conjunctio. And
Say that again?
Conjunctio, the alchemical marriage. And, you know, in the book, it's fiction. The guy next door buys the house next door, and we become friends, and then we become lovers, and then we get married, and then we go to Santorini, and we have the very mystical honeymoon, and blah, blah, blah. And all these incredible things happen, you know, and it's been a bestseller on Amazon. And I'll have people who will send me emails, and they'll go, Jean, how come you never posted any pictures of your honeymoon with Samuel on Facebook?
This and I'm is like,
wait a minute, right? Did you not read the first part of the book where it says this is fiction? Because I haven't found Samuel yet, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah. So, you know I did that. And mm-hmm. I promise you that it felt so real. Mm-hmm. And I still to this day keep thinking he's going to knock on the door.
Well, I'd be willing to bet he will, because I haven't had a ton of relationships, but I've had a handful of them. And I know when I met my first husband, I met him like literally right after I had finally ended a very long relationship, which of mm-hmm. course I was very upset about, but I didn't know what I was doing, but I was doing the inner work to kind of, it's not get over, but basically process that whole thing. Okay. Right. So, I mean, it was probably less than a month after I told the boy that I was dating, you know, cause we kind of evolved to less close, and mm-hmm. he kept coming around whenever he wanted. So eventually I said, you know what, you got to stop coming around. This is not good for me. This is what happens. And, you know, he kind of looked at me like he wanted something else, or like he wasn't satisfied with that. I was like, I cannot be friends with you. We've gone way too far. Like we've become too close. We've done too many things. I've had too many dreams about doing things with you, and we're not doing that. And that's okay. But I have to just let it go. And part of that is you need to stay away and don't come back. Yeah. And I actually said, I forgive you. I forgive me. I forgive us. I forgive this whole experience. And I never saw him again.
Yeah.
But I mean, less than a month later, I wind up meeting the person who becomes my husband. And energetically, I could say I was not ready to even receive that person in my life, my husband, until I had dealt with that past relationship and all, you know, this stuff that I learned from it. So, I would be willing to, but like, I mean, it's a podcast. It's going to get broadcast. It'd be pretty cool to listen to this later after I met this person, you know?
Well, and the thing is, you know, I think I had to last week remember that whole thing about the monitor in the corner mm-hmm. and the multidimensionality and then, you know, spewing out and then coming home. He wants a divorce, blah, 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 because it gave me the clarity to realize that, I mean, I've done all the forgiveness work on him, mm-hmm. you know, over and over again. However, it gave me the clarity to realize that not only was it the right thing to do, it had to be because of the mm-hmm. the disparity in who we were. We couldn't, like magnets, you know, repel, you know. And so it was more than just forgiving. It was just understanding that, poof, it had to go. And so something shifted around that.
Yeah. So you, in the thing that we just did a few hours ago, one of your cards says there's a piece of paper.
It was that relationship.
Oh, was it? Okay.
When I was doing the InterSpeak cards,
yeah.
I knew exactly. And when I had the me right on the paper and I turned it around, she said, "You are so much more than you allowed yourself to be because of what he thought."
You were taking on some of his thoughts.
Yeah. When I smashed that mirror, mm-hmm. you know, I was able to see the real me, the strong me, the creative me, the now me.
Interestingly enough, the message that I got on my paper as I was doing the same exercise was, and this had something to do with my husband dying and then the situation that happened after. The message was to some extent, it was kind of like, it's not as talking about a particular incident that was difficult, right? It's not as bad as you think it is. And really the message was, language is really going to limit this.
Yeah.
All of it was for your higher good. And that would translate into these people were catalysts for you, just like you're talking about with your husband, right? He's a catalyst. It's a physical thing for you to recognize. We're not in alignment anymore. I have to make this change, but it's a physical representation of that. And that's the same thing I got was like, this experience that we were working healing it still comes from love because it was the catalyst that then pushed me to go farther into what I wanted to do.
Totally. Yeah. I would not be who I am today if we hadn't gotten divorced. You mm-hmm. know, I would still be in a box somewhere. Yeah. You know, I mean, that's why I'm Jean Adrian, because when I wrote my first book, he said, "Don't you dare publish that using our name. I don't want people to know I'm married to a crazy woman."
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I said, okay, Adrian's my middle name. So mm-hmm. I'll just publish it under Jean Adrian.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how that whole thing, this whole persona got started.
Right. So he restricted you and something new birthed.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Awesome. Mm-hmm.
Bless his little heart.
Yeah. I kind of wonder, like, do you think he knows that?
No, I doubt it. Yeah. So
I kind of tend to think that they, maybe not their physical presentation, that portion of them is physical, but I do think that on the higher plane, their soul essentially does know that they're there. And that's my hope for anybody that I have huge disagreements with, because.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would believe, my belief is that, you know, I signed him up before I incarnated mm-hmm. to play that role of restricting me so I would get the strength to break free of that.
Right. Yep.
You know, and so I can only thank him for that.
Yeah. So does that play out in your 3D? Does that play out in 3D? Like if you were to, I don't know if you interact with him anymore, but if you were to interact with him, how does that feel for you? Does it feel like gratitude, or does it feel like you're still dealing with the 3D and you go into old habits or something?
Yeah. I don't know. Cause I haven't actually seen him since mm-hmm. the day that we closed on the house.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So the divorce was final and it took a while for the house to sell. And I haven't seen him since that day. So I have no idea. I don't think I would have any charge with him at all anymore. It would just be like, you know, it's kind of like my first husband, the father of my kids. You know, I saw him not too long ago at a thing for my granddaughter. And it was like, you know, he's a nice guy. I wonder how we ever got together, you know, but
yeah.
So there was like nothing there. No resentment, no judgment. And, you know,
yeah,
just is neutral.
Well, and then you definitely promise. Say it again.
Orthogonal. That's my new favorite word.
Okay.
It means a neutral stance. Okay. Yeah.
I like that. Yeah, that's definitely an indicator of real progress, real growth.
Yeah.
To not be, I mean, that's essentially what I see all the time is, you know, you work on this stuff spiritually, but sometimes you don't ever have any clue if you've actually done anything. Right. But the real test is if you're put in the same situation and you're orthogonal.
Yeah.
And there's, no huge response. Which all also goes back to Michael Singer stuff, which is if the emotions come in, I read a quote, I actually shared it. If you express the emotion, it's disrupting things. If you suppress the emotion, it's disrupting things. So essentially you should just be allowing it to come in and just watch it.
Right.
And so it's not disturbing you in a sense. That doesn't mean you're not experiencing it, which is a hard concept too.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think we have to accept everything. We don't have to agree with it. Mm-hmm. We don't have to like it, but we have to accept that it happens. Mm-hmm. Which is, I think, the same thing. Just observe it and let it go. Because when we don't, it clenches up.
Yep.
And then it makes a wound that starts out in our field somewhere. And if we hang on to it long enough, it becomes a compression inside our physical body. And then we get sick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm just going to pull this in because we touch on this stuff occasionally throughout some of the things. But the more I've gotten into this stuff, the more excited I got. I actually haven't done fine arts since I graduated college. So 1999, it's been a long time, but, I remember what it's like to do that. I know I could go back into doing that again, but somebody described it. I was watching an astrology video and he was kind of talking like these people, which happened to be my chart, is they essentially open up, they download the information. And that is exactly how it feels. So like a lot of people who consider themselves not creative, look at creative people and they think, oh my gosh, how can you do that? Well, there's a process to it. It's just like the energy work. You do certain things, but essentially you just open up and the information comes through. Well, that can be said of writers, of anybody who's making anything, right? Like writers, let's say software designers, it really does not matter what it is. And so the information is coming through. And that's why, you know, I'm biased because I like art stuff, but I really love movies because they're visual, but they also kind of communicate information in a way that's not language. Not that there's not language, but it's not restricted to language. And so you can have these images that come through and create something. And I do think that they're inspired. Like, I don't know if you've seen, I think the movie's about a year old, but when I saw it, now I like a lot of movies and I don't necessarily say X is my favorite. There's a lot of them that I say, oh, I really, really like that. I've watched that this many times. I came out of that movie theater. My now husband called me and said, so how'd you like the movie? I said, oh, it's my favorite movie. Now it's my favorite movie. And I don't say that about anything. It was everything, everywhere, all at once.
Uh-huh.
Have you? Okay. Yeah.
I haven't seen it.
You've got to see it. Yeah.
I haven't watched a movie in years because I've gotten to this place where I can't process the visual stimulation. Now I read books like they're going out of style and I get that inspiration out of books.
Yeah. Right. So it doesn't really matter how you get it.
Handle the visual stimulation.
Right. And that's, as I've gone through watching movies, sometimes, I mean, I guess I'm to the age where like I watch the movie and I'm like, I don't know who made this movie, but they've got to be 30. You know, like I can guess their age and then I go look it up, like, yep, they're in their 30s. and that's one of those, like I can see why it would be like that. But even if it's just the concepts and what I just adore about it is somebody channeled that. So the idea of the movie is that it's, there's only a now moment and we're pulling on the strengths, and this is in the movie, we pull on the strengths of our other versions of ourselves in other dimensions. Mm-hmm. To be able to handle the dimension that you're in and you're existing in, which is exactly what we all talk about, right? But this is made into a movie. And so it just happens like
now. Watch that movie
Say it again.
I think I'm gonna have to break my little thing and watch that movie.
Well, it's really fantastic. I mean, they are young directors. I adored it. And they do things that that are very modern. So, like, for example, I guess it's they're in the in between. Like, they're in the characters are interacting with each other, but they're not in a particular dimension other than this place where they interact. Mm-hmm. And the daughter has this thing. She talks about the everything bagel, and it's like a bagel up in the sky, and it's spinning, and it's kind of sucking everything in. So that's kind of silly, right? Like that's, yeah. but it actually works. Like it's the everything bagel. It has everything. And it, yeah, it's pretty amazing. But some of it's kind of cheesy and corny and, you know.
But, you know, I mean, this has been going on for a long time. George Lucas was absolutely channeling realities when he created the Star Wars thing, because that's how our souls evolved through all these different galaxies. Uh-huh. I know that's right. You know, okay, where did he get that? I wonder.
Exactly. Okay. And it's funny because I did talk to somebody who does talk to aliens and sees all that kind of stuff. And she said, oh yeah, that's based on, and then she gives some names for things.
Orion.
It's funny because another conversation, which is going to come out soon too, probably in March, is I just had a conversation with somebody, Kelly Boyer, and she basically downloaded, you don't have to believe in or be the woo to experience the woo. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's an example of my husband is not into any of this stuff, but yet he is getting the vibes that we think he's, quote, wrong, right? But also, Star Wars, look at it. You know, when we talk about this kind of energy work, and they talk. If you like Star Wars, you're like, well, that's the Force.
Yeah.
That's real. It's not pretend. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was, you know, it was this huge thing of duality, you know, because the Darth Vader people were the Black League, and, mm-hmm. you know, the Jedi Warriors were the insurrection people trying to get balance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why I adore art and I'm kind of like open to whatever it is, but I do enjoy seeing those.
I told you how shut down I was.
Yes.
I couldn't draw these cards. Well, I mean, look at my house.
Oh, and those are all yours? Wow.
Those are all mine. Yeah.
Okay. So will you share that on here? Share that now, the story about the art. The card. Oh, yeah.
So my guides told me that they wanted to talk to me about DNA and that I needed to create DNA cards that would help people to wake up and remember all these latent gifts and abilities that they had. And I said, I don't draw, because they wanted me to draw 142 pictures that held latent strands of DNA. I can't do that. And he said, I just happen to know that you have not one, but two packs of colored pencils and a drawing pad that you've never used, which I had bought because I had a house up in the mountains and I was going to use it. I was going to start drawing nature things or try, but I could never bring myself to do it because my sixth grade teacher ragged on a project that we had done in the class. I was so convinced that it was just a masterpiece. Mm-hmm. And she, you know, said I had no talent at all. You know, and whatever. And from that point on, I never tried again.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but I did with this and it cracked me open. I had so much fun doing it. I actually received them too fast and made myself kind of sick. You know, so I had to back off a little bit on that. Mm-hmm. And then somebody invited me to one of these parties where you bring a bottle of wine and you paint something. Mm-hmm. And what the hell? I mean, it's like, as long as wine's involved, I'm sure I can enjoy that. You know, and so I went and I got lost in the meditative aspect of painting, mm-hmm. and it looked pretty good. So I signed up to go to the next class that she had, and that one was even better. And then I thought, man, I think I got to take lessons, you know, heck with the wine.
Yeah.
I really need to channel this energy. And so literally my house is full, you know, of paintings, and I'm having to rotate stuff out because I can't sell them. Because they're my babies.
I find that really interesting. Like you just, which I think people do sometimes, but you said to heck with the wine. Well, the wine was a tool to get you to relax, to kind of calm down that mental chat, that sixth grade teacher mind, right? The words that came through, you just relax that. And then when you start to find your way, then you just let go of that particular tool.
And you know, and I think that that is also why when I'm channeling, mm-hmm. stuff, information flows to me in my car when I'm driving or in the shower, because that linear mind is kind of shut down. My linear mind is occupied in the car, keeping myself between the lines, mm-hmm. you know, and not mm-hmm. other cars. So yeah. the receptive right part of my brain is wide open to mm-hmm. getting information.
Yeah.
And the same thing happens in the shower. I don't know exactly how the mechanics of that one.
Well, I'll tell you what I think it is. And I mean, I could be wrong, but I think I'm pretty close to this. So I didn't ever meditate, never heard of that stuff. Then my husband dies and I didn't know what I'm going to do, but I don't want to get up and do the other thing. So I wind up listening to all different kinds of things. Yes, Deepak Chopra was part of it, but basically I'm hearing a whole lot of stuff about meditation. And the answer to whatever question I have is meditation, which is mostly the answer. And of course, I had the issues that other people have, like, oh, I don't know if I can do it, whatever. I go on and I keep listening and I keep listening to different people talking about different things. And I think it was something I was listening to with Deepak Chopra, and the way he was articulating it was telling me meditation is not done in a particular position. I think what it is when we are calm, safe, and our minds are not completely occupied with keeping ourselves safe. So I personally think when you exercise, if you're doing something that's not brand new and you're not worried about hurting yourself and you're doing it repetitively, I think that repetitive thing is important. You do this repetitive thing. It doesn't require all of your mind. But it's satisfying the mind enough that the chatty part doesn't overtake. And so when the chatty part quiets, this other part of your mind is able to be occupied and satisfied, then it's almost like the noise calms down and then you can hear the things. So I don't think it really matters.
You just tell me why it works. So for 4 years, I had a job where I drove. I was responsible for calling on universities and colleges in Georgia, south of Atlanta. Okay. And I was in my car because most of those places you can't fly to. So I would have to drive there. And I listened to books on tape, because that was back in the day when there were books mm-hmm. on tape. And so I got to where I could keep my car on the road mm-hmm. and I could lose myself into a book on tape. Mm-hmm. And I was safe mm-hmm. and I was getting information. And so then when I quit listening to the audibles, but I'm driving and it's a memory thing of you mm-hmm. can do this without thinking about it because you know how to do it. Then my mind is free and then they can talk to me.
Yeah. Which technically could happen doing any other activity. That's right. Just one that you're familiar with, you're comfortable with, you do it anyways.
Totally. Yeah. Because it doesn't usually happen to me at the gym.
Yeah. Well, actually I can remember even like within the last year or so, I was really mad about something and I was so angry. I like couldn't sit still. And of course I knew, okay, the answer is to meditate. Well, if you're angry and you can't sit still, you don't want to meditate, right? I was like, oh, I'm going to the gym. Okay. I'm going to make exercise and meditation work again. I don't care if this sounds
stupid. I know I can do that.
Tell anybody. Yeah. But I did. It worked. I mean, like, I'm sure some of it was getting some of the energy out, you know, but some of it was also, I got the answers I needed to get. And I was calm after that.
Yeah. I love it.
Send inquiries, suggestions for new discussion topics, and comments to podcast@happylioncenter.com. That's podcast@happylioncenter.com. If you found this content enjoyable or helpful, please comment, like, share, and download. Donations are appreciated and help us to produce more of similar content. Consider making a contribution at the links in the description box. Your support is greatly appreciated. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the Happy Lion Center and are not intended to malign any religion, ethnic group, club, organization, company, individual, or anyone or anything. None of the content provided should be considered a substitute for legal, financial, medical, psychiatric advice, or as care from a certified professional.